Are you filled with fear, doubt, worry about the future of our country? Do you feel the urgency to act before it's too late? If yes, then this podcast is for you. It's time for us all to confront the critical issues threatening our nation's fabric, our democracy itself, irregardless of our political stance. If you're ready to face reality, handle the tough questions, and find real solutions, then here's your host, Debbie Lynn Molyneux.
Welcome to the Terrified Nation podcast. I'm your host, Debbie Lynn Molyneux. Can we save our nation? You know, that's what we're exploring in this podcast. And for me, the answer is, of course we can. We must. Now, this show is where we explore alternatives to being afraid. And in the first five episodes, I really offer a background framework that I recommend you listen to because it provides a really good foundation that answers the question, now what? And we interview guests here who have gone from being afraid or angry or hopeless to become advocates for our nation, to live into the promise of the founders. And each of them have dedicated themselves to a better future. I like to start each show with a question that we'll explore together. And today's question is, who are the people of Gen Z? These folks that were born after 2000, and how can we, the Terrified Nation, better listen to their perspective? So I'd like to introduce our guest for today, Emily Munoz. Now, Emily is a podcaster with the Next Generation Politics Podcast. And Emily is also a senior in the law program at Truman High School in the Bronx, New York. And she got involved with Why Vote Next Gen through a democracy camp and the Changemakers Institute during a summer program, and soon became a Changemakers peer leader herself, a member also of the New York City Youth Agenda Steering Committee, and of course, a host of the NGP Roundtable podcast. Now, what brought Emily to the podcast was an eagerness to hear diverse perspectives and to broaden her understanding of politics and social justice. Some of the things she does outside of the podcast are read and write poetry, lead her school's RAP Social Justice Peer Leader Club, and collaborate with numerous organizations to advance international gender and racial equality. Emily Munoz, welcome to the Terrified Nation podcast.
Hello.
Well, you recently interviewed me for your podcast, and I had so much fun that I really wanted to speak with you more. And so I invited you here on this show, on the Terrified Nation podcast, to ask you about your preferred future. And this is part of a larger research project where we are sampling everyday Americans about what they want. So this research is to imagine a future that we actually want for ourselves. And it's about a preferred future, not what you believe is possible or probable. So we're going to travel today within your current life into the future. We recommend somewhere between 2 and 20 years, but you can choose any number you want. How far do you want to go? What sounds right for you?
I'm going to think about it for a second.
Of course.
Okay, so right now I'm 17. Okay. 20 years is too much. So I'm going to say 15. 15 sounds good.
15. Okay, and you can do shorter if you want. If you want to just do like 2 or 3 years, you can do that too.
I'll say 10. Actually, okay. Yeah, I'll say 10.
And the winner is 10 years. You sure?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, get comfortable where you are right now, and let's take a few deep breaths, because we're going to climb into a time machine that's going to take us into your future, where you're going to be 27, and the year will be 2034. And so we're closing the door now, and we're starting to move into the future. When we get there, Emily, I really want you to just like observe yourself. And so you're going to have like a split screen where you are your current self at 17, observing your future self at 27. And so we're going to just observe yourself and respond with what you see. Got it?
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're pulling into the 2034 station right now. And ding, here we are in 2034. And the first question is pretty simple. It's just like, where are we?
I see myself being in Washington, D.C. and 27. So I pretty much graduated college 5 years ago. And I either went on to graduate school or law school, if I was brave enough, law school. And now I'm probably out of law school and interning somewhere if everything went well. Like, I'm interning somewhere, or I'm out of grad school and I'm interning somewhere in DC, and I'm at the White House and we're passing laws on climate change and, you know, economic mobility and just all these issues that I care about. That's what I see, hopefully, at 27. And I have a nice little apartment. Hopefully inflation doesn't, like, get too crazy. I have a nice, hopefully it's not a shoebox. Hopefully I have my room, a kitchen, a bathroom, and, you know, I have friends. I can go out. I'm really happy, and I'm just feeling the Washington, D.C. weather.
So just to recap here, in 10 years, you're going to be living your preferred future. So remember, you can make up anything you want here because it's about what you prefer. So you're going to be living in Washington, D.C. You'll have just finished law school. You're interning somewhere, not exactly sure where, maybe at the White House, you said?
Yeah.
And you're living in D.C. and helping to make laws on climate change.
Climate change, economic mobility, all the issues that I know are going to be serious in 10 years.
And you're going to have a really cute apartment and have fun with your friends.
Yep.
Okay. Anything else about where you are in 10 years?
I hope that I'm happy, and I hope that I'm where I want to be in my career.
Well, we're going to get to some of that. The next question in this research interview is, like, as you observe your 27-year-old self, what are you most proud of?
I'm probably very reminiscent of my college years and everything that I accomplished in grad school or law school or whatever I choose after college. And I'm just very proud of the community and the people that I've been able to build so far.
So you're proud of your education, the career choices that you're making, your relationships in the community.
Yeah.
And if I got any of that wrong, feel free to correct me.
Yeah, relationships in the community and also with friends.
Okay. So how do you spend an average day? Like, take me from the time you wake up in the morning until you go to bed.
As a 27-year-old?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So I wake up, brush my teeth, shower, everything. I make my coffee. Coffee black, because I'm just so mature now. I drink my coffee black, and then I have my little biscuits or cookies or whatever just sitting there, and I dip it into my coffee, and then I make some omelets, or I make pancakes or anything, and I'm eating and I'm sitting in front of the TV. I'm watching my favorite show. It's probably a show that doesn't even exist right now, but it exists then. And I'm just really happy, and I'm looking out the window, and it's a good day. And then I get ready later to go to either the law firm or the White House that I'm interning at. And I'm really happy. I have on a snazzy suit and, like, I tie up the buttons, and I have these really nice heels, or not heels because I don't walk good in heels, but hopefully I've mastered that by this time. And I'm just completely happy, and I feel at my zen. And then I walk out of my apartment, and I go to downtown DC with, you know, the Capitol, the White House, and I go where I need to from there.
And when you're done working, what happens?
Well, after work, I probably go out with my friends or with some of my coworkers, and we'll probably explore DC, go to fun places that are there, eat, go to a game, maybe travel somewhere else.
How about the weekends? What do you do on the weekends?
On the weekends, I'm probably running my nonprofit. I picture myself having a nonprofit in like education policy or somewhere dealing with education equity so I could help people who are less fortunate in terms of getting their education. Because by this point, and even now, but especially by that point, I felt very lucky to be at the place where I am. Considering the fact that I do come from the Bronx, I want to make sure that I'm including people from underrepresented communities and making sure that they have access to the resources that I was able to have access to. And so I'm either running my own nonprofit or I'm taking key part in a nonprofit that I really value, or I'm also volunteering, using my time somewhere, helping the less fortunate. And when I'm not doing that, I'm traveling the United States. I'm going everywhere because I actually, like, my undergrad was somewhere that was really far from me, and that helped me to open up like to the States and to the world. So I'm probably hopping on Amtrak or hopping on a plane and going somewhere and visiting and like just living my life and traveling.
And in this future life where you're doing this really important work centered in Washington, D.C. and helping, I hear laws around climate change, I hear laws around education and helping underserved communities. How will you feel most of the time?
I will feel very fulfilled, but I might feel almost imposter-like. I think that's something that I have right now. And by 27, I don't think that will completely just leave. I think I'll definitely feel like I was fortunate and I hope that I could do something with it. And I look around and there's so much, there's a huge gap in education. There's a huge gap in economics. I definitely feel a bit on the fence of, I'm very happy that it got here, but how can I service everyone else? So I'm very happy and fulfilled, but there's still a sense in me that's asking, what can I do to make sure that people have what I have?
And you thought you might still have a little bit of imposter, like imposter syndrome?
Yeah.
Okay. Just a word of advice. I'm older. I won't say how much older, and I still have it. And I just have learned to ignore it.
Yeah.
So it's not a helpful voice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just, you know, but I understand it really well.
Some things will never leave, but you just learn how to navigate it.
Yep. It's just kind of part of our culture right now. And by the way, everybody has it.
Yep.
So you're not alone. And I guess what I'm trying to say is you're not alone in that feeling. We all have it to some degree or another.
Yep.
Yep. Yep. Oh, we're coming into the home stretch here because I really, you know, take a moment if you want to and just observe your 27-year-old self. And what do you see as your like top 3 to 5 priority values, or you could say qualities, if that's a better word for you?
I would say number one, God, because I'm very, very faithful, very spiritual, and I'm like very serious about God and like just serious about that. That always comes first in my life. So that's going to center everything that I do. And number two would be my friends and my community, because I really value giving back. I really value honesty. I value being meaningful and cherishing people that are in your life or people that just make the world better in some way, and learning to bring people up. And three, I value advancement. Like, I never want to be at a place where I'm just okay where I'm at. I want to constantly advance, whether that be gradually or on a macro level. I want to work hard and I want to see that hard work. I want to make sure that if ever there's a room for improvement, I'm making sure that I get there one way or another.
So those again are God, friends or relationships, and advancement or growth.
Yeah.
Anything else pop to mind? You can go up. 3 is just an arbitrary number. So if you have more, feel free.
Because like my mind is always like works in threes. I feel like three is the golden number. Like
you're welcome to stick with three. I'm just trying to pull out. There's another one that I hear in there that I will just prompt you now, and that's open-mindedness or curiosity.
Curiosity, that definitely comes up, and open-mindedness. Open-mindedness, I feel like because I included God, like that sort of comes into the conversation, like open-mindedness and understanding people. But on itself, it is something that I value. I am open-minded, but I also have a strict set of values. So I guess I wouldn't consider open-mindedness something that's super key to me. I guess important, but I wouldn't rate it amongst my favorite values because I feel like open-mindedness is something, it's important, but to what extent are we open in our minds? Mm-hmm. So I value it, but not as my best value. Okay. But I would definitely say curiosity, because getting to know things that are not like me, like I can open my mind, I can close my mind, but at the end of the day, I can always be curious. I can always like search and want to find out more. And hey, maybe if I am curious and I do find out something, then maybe I'll open my mind. So yeah, curiosity would be one.
I love that distinction between curiosity and open-mindedness, because people often collapse them. I know that I'm open-minded about some things, and other things I'm like, no, I've decided I don't need to talk about that anymore.
Yeah.
And it's okay.
Yeah. I feel like there's this sort of sense that you have to, because we live in a progressive society, and I'm definitely progressive, but I think we're at a point where people are just expected to change every set of value that they have, and our values are going to be shaped on our experience and how we were raised or what we've been through in life. And there are just some things where we just can't change the goalposts, where it's this is my value, like I can't change it. So I value open-mindedness, but to which extent, that's something arguable.
I got it. We're coming into the home stretch, Emily. And the next to last question, though, is as you think about your preferred future, and you're in Washington, D.C., you finish law school, you're interning for either the White House or a law firm nearby, you have a nice apartment and a group of friends and coworkers that you hang out with regularly, you travel around the country, you're generally happy, and you're kind of addressing, or if you will, acknowledging that the imposter syndrome might still be there, but you're actually overall really happy and you're contributing back to the community where you live. So what does the community that supports this future for you need to include or provide?
I think we definitely need to provide room for young voices, because I definitely grew up in a kind of family or like just a community or just a society in general where young voices are not prioritized. And we already see it with the people who are running for president. These are 80-year-old people who, it's like, you know, not to be ageist, it's just we haven't really had room for people who have younger ideas. And our society definitely leans to prioritizing more older voices, which I understand because people definitely find wisdom in those who are older. But there's also great things that young people bring. We do bring in a different perspective, and every generation has something going for it. And I want to be at a place where, as a young person, as a 27-year-old, where my ideas are being honored, where I'm not just being written off as, oh, that's the intern that gets me coffee every day, where I can work closely with the people who I'm with and they could recognize this young lady has worked hard. And I can also be at a point where I could look at people younger than me and say, this young person has worked very hard. And, you know, in any way that I could help them, I'm going to help them. I want to make sure that there's room for everyone to succeed, whether you're older, whether you're younger, whether you're middle-aged. All voices are prioritized and people aren't just written off. Rather, we look at people for the experiences and the knowledge that they've attained rather than the supposed wisdom that we think they have.
So if I were to kind of recap that, Emily, I'm hearing that what the future community needs to include or provide is a space for all voices to be heard and have and be given credibility or credence for contributing.
Yeah.
Anything else that your community needs to include?
Well, just building off on that, I'm hoping that we'd be at a point where just nationalism, tribalism, racism, all of the isms, where we could get to a point where people are just looked at as individuals. And like being a Black girl in New York City, despite it being a melting pot, it's just so segregated. And I imagine it being similar in a place like Washington, D.C. And I've definitely been underestimated at times because of my background, because of my skin, my hair, my nose, you know, these things that identify me as a Black person. I've definitely been underestimated in so many ways. But there was always somebody, or at least some people, that stood up and said, hey, we're going to give this girl a platform. She has something to say. Let's hear what she has to say. You know, she's not just a girl from the Bronx. She's not just another statistic. She has a voice. And I see that as an individual, not as like a pity cry or like anything, but just because she's a person that has a powerful voice. And I see it. I'm going to make sure that we could turn her voice into something bigger. We're going to platform her and help her. And I hope that we're at a point where everybody thinks like that, where everybody is just seen as an individual and people aren't just thought of who they are based on where they live or what they look like or who they are associating themselves with. Rather, we can look at people for each individual's characteristics that they have and reward them based on that. That happens now, but I hope we get to a point where that's just expected. It's just expected. You're an individual. It doesn't matter where you come from. It doesn't matter where you live. It doesn't matter this. We just want to hear what you have to say. If you got it, you got it. If you don't got it, you don't got it. So I definitely want to see that.
Amen, sister. You just kind of recapped like the last 20 years of my work. You've nailed it. Anything else that your future community should provide or include for you to have your preferred life?
I know that climate change and the state of the economy and the state of politics and, like, you know, ethnic relations, national relations, nationalism is at an all-time high right now. I hope that things simmer down and that we can finally get to a place where we are having these important discussions about climate change and how can we make sure that we're not continuing to pollute this planet? Because at 27, I'll still have, what, 60 years, hopefully, to live. And hopefully, I can live that comfortably. So I'm just hoping that our elected officials, maybe I'll be one of them, but I'm hoping that our elected officials prioritize that and just look after the younger generations and make sure that everything is stable.
What just came to mind there was this seventh generation story that we've kind of adopted or appropriated from Native American cultures. And I was really interested to learn in the last few years that when they talk about seven generations, it's actually the previous three, the current and the forward three, or the future three, is what makes up the seven generations. I had always thought it was just, you know, looking seven generations into the future, but that's not actually what it is. It's honoring the ancestors, being responsible for the present and planning ahead for future generations. And that really seems so wise to me.
It is.
And it resonates with what you're saying right now. It really brought that back to mind.
Yeah. If our elected officials had that way of thinking, which is why I think the way that our Constitution was founded, although yes, I'm very, you know, like I am American and those are my values too. It's just, I think our founding fathers did not really leave room for things that are unprecedented. I don't think they really thought about, you know, in five generations, is climate change going to be real? You know, is gun violence going to be a problem? I don't think they thought about that. And
how could
so,
they?
Yeah, like it's crazy. But the thing is, like in our country, it's sort of just, this is the Constitution and that's just that. Like there's people who say, hey, our Constitution says this, we must listen to it. And I agree with that, but I'm very progressive in a way that we must think about the future generations. Just like that seven generation thing from the Native American tales. It's like we need to think like that, because yeah, although the founding fathers couldn't think about that, we have the opportunity to now. And there just has to be some kind of way where, you know, we already understand the way that our world is going. We need to do something about it. And maybe I won't be here in 100 years, but somebody else will.
Yeah. Well, and even Thomas Jefferson thought the Constitution needed to be rewritten by each new generation.
Yeah.
That hasn't gone so well.
Hey, has it?
Well, we're down to the last question, and I'm going to like use the big vacuum cleaner and pull us back into 2024 and your 17-year-old self. And this next question is really like we've spent, you know, half an hour or so here in your preferred future, looking at it, observing it, commenting on it, sharing hopes and dreams about what that could be for you. And most importantly, like what the community that could support that future would need to include or provide. And so this last question is really, is there anything that you are doing or can do today or in the near future to influence or co-create that community that's going to support you in 2034?
Wow, so that kind of brings it back to now.
Right.
So I'm going to touch up on a few things. I'm going to say, like, the work that I'm doing and the education that I'm doing, like, I am going to college next year, and I have so many organizations that I've been able to work with that I'm so grateful that I could say, hey, I could call this person, or hey, I could call that person. And so, you know, I have people that really care about me. I have people that see the work that I do, and they really love it. And I do so much. I'm involved with so much, like from my poetry to my community engagements, working with the mayor's office, working with different nonprofits. I'm so happy that I've earned it all. I never had, you know, a parent that was like, let me get my son an internship at, you know, McKinsey or whatever, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. Like, I never had that. And so I'm happy that I was able to look for opportunities and to find them and get it through my own will, through my own voice, through the things I'm passionate about. So that is going to stick through and through, even when I get to college next year. Mm-hmm. And also, like, speaking of the organizations that I work with, Next Generation Politics, of course, I'm here right now because of Next Generation Politics. And the work that we do is really important. Why Vote in Next Gen? Hundreds of youth have been involved, and I will make an estimate that thousands of more are involved because of how, you know, the outreach of us hundreds of youth already sharing that to other people, our family members, friends, schoolmates, whatnot. And it's important. Like, grassroots work is important. The things that I'm doing right now, and I hope that Next Gen grows. I hope that programs like Next Gen grows. And if you want to check out Next Generation Politics, search up Next Generation Politics, the Roundtable. That's the podcast. I'm on there. We have amazing young people who have voices. And also, if you want to find out more about me, I don't know what I'll be doing in college, but maybe I'll be on another podcast in college. My name is Emily Munoz. You can really search me up anywhere. You could see more of the work that I do online. And so, yeah.
Well, Emily, I'd like to end this interview with an invitation. Another one, I guess I should say. but that invitation is to spend 5 minutes every day thinking about this future self that we've just created and feeling those feelings and, you know, evolving it as you need to. But in those 5 minutes every day, include a sense of awe and wonder about this future that you're creating for yourself. And why we want to do this is because neuroscience research shows that we subconsciously create what we focus on. And so we have a choice. Like, and one of the things that I love about what you said there in your recap is like, you've been choosing to be engaged. You've been choosing to reach out to the mayor's office in New York. You've been choosing to get involved with Next Generation Politics. You are already co-creating the future that you prefer. And this little extra 5 minutes a day is another way to just kind of like ground that, if you will, into your subconscious. And so we can choose our preferred future instead of being at the whim of others. So Emily Munoz, thank you so much for being a guest on the Terrified Nation.
Thank you so much for inviting me here.
And if you in the Terrified Nation listening world would like to participate in this national research project, visit AmericanFuture.us and click on the self-interview button. Now, in closing today's show, I'd really like to thank you, the listeners, for giving a damn about our nation. We may be a terrified nation today, but we can do better. We can save the USA. Join me next time.
So that's it for today's episode of Terrified Nation. Head on over to iTunes or wherever you listen and subscribe to the show. One lucky listener every single week who posts a review on iTunes will win a chance in the grand prize drawing to win a $15,000 private VIP day with Debbie Lynn Molyneux herself. Be sure to head on over to TerrifiedNationPodcast.com and pick up a free copy of Debbie Lynn's gift and join us on the next episode.